Welcome back in. Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5. The Game, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have Corey Curtis from News 2 dropping by at 8 o'clock. We'll get into the latest with the Tennessee Titans with him. Also look ahead to a little free agency right around the corner as well. So that coming up at 8 o'clock. Darren McFarland at 9 o'clock, host of Darren Donegan Chase. And then Mike Tannenbaum from ESPN at 9:30, getting into a little NFL offseason with him as well. So a lot still to come here today on the show. And as always, we'll take your thoughts and reaction on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Right now, Joe, discussing the Tennessee Volunteers and a big win yesterday for the Vols against Florida, 65-54. It was ugly and rough at times in the first half. They figure it out, start to play much better as the game goes on, and they get a big win yesterday at home on Senior Day as they prepare now for the SEC tournament. What did you think of the Vols in the game yesterday against Florida? And I'll ask you the same question that I asked Josh Ward. Where do you think this team is mentally now after the big win yesterday, now heading into this week in the SEC tournament?
I mean, I don't know if you can overstate what that meant the last 24 minutes or so, basically. Florida in that time scored 21 points, I believe, 21 points in the last 24 minutes. So that's on a pace to score about 35 in a game, 35, 36 points for the Gators. So the defense looked like great Tennessee defense that we've seen a lot this year, and they still are – hard to watch in the half court sometimes, and they still don't totally seem sure of everything they're doing. But, man, when Fulkerson attacks and spins and all the stuff he was doing yesterday, now you have that. You have a few possessions a game where you can just go to him and he'll make something happen. And then, obviously, when they run, they're so much better. I mean, the pace of the game is really important to this team. But I think it's huge. Like, again, they haven't won the SEC tournament since neither of you were alive for many, many years to come. 1979. So I would think that
I was still 13 years away from being alive at that point,
yes.
Joe.
Thank you. Thank you. Very depressing. But I would think that they would that would be something they'd really, really want to do beyond, you know, getting ready for the NCAA tournament. And there was never going to do that if they didn't win yesterday. You know, I mean, the rotation right now is basically seven guys. You know, he'll throw in a Devontae Gaines for a minute, an Olivier Nkamwa for a couple minutes, and in some games he might play more. But basically it's seven guys in this rotation. You're not going to do anything four games of 4 days. So that's big. But more than that is just confidence and just a good feeling. It's been a while for this team since they looked like they had more energy than the opponent and actually enjoyed playing basketball. And so I think a lot of good comes out of yesterday. Now they come out and lose to like Vanderbilt on Friday, and it doesn't matter, you know. But because it could be, Vanderbilt, probably going to be, you know, Vanderbilt, Florida on Thursday to play Tennessee. But I've got to feel like they are in much better shape based off 24 good minutes of basketball.
And a guy who we've spent a lot of time talking about here on the show has been John Fulkerson, and I think at times this year has just been off and not as aggressive as we've seen him be in the past. 14 points yesterday, 6 of 10 from the field, 7 rebounds in 34 minutes for Fulkerson yesterday. I thought he was big, obviously an emotional scene as well, with it being Senior Day and him in tears coming off the court there. Just a really cool scene for John Fulkerson. And Rick Barnes was asked about him after the game and just what the moment was like for Fulkerson watching that and the game that he had as well. Here's what Tennessee coach Rick Barnes had to say about John Fulkerson.
Rick, how good was it to see Fulkerson not only produce the way he did, but the way he did it, aggressive attacking early on?
You know, Grant, I told him at halftime, if you'll get back to playing with that kind of force, we'll get back exactly where we want to be, because he made a couple moves where he really played above the rim, and he made some plays. And this week, if he can just get that and get it bottled up, and you know, it's going to be good. I mean, for him, it'll be good for us. But to see him, you know, no one loves this university more than he does. I mean, he's grown up. I think you would say he's been a volunteer his whole life, and for him, it was an emotional day. I think probably for him, as much as any player that we've had since we've been here, because of his ties to the state, and but for him to come out and again, just get aggressive and play with the force that he did at times is what we need. And happy for him. Really am happy for him.
So that was Rick Barnes after the game yesterday talking about John Fulkerson. Joe, what did you think of Fulkerson's performance yesterday? One that you saw coming, by the way, so congratulations to you. And just the scene as a whole and how emotional it was inside that building yesterday for Fulkerson.
Yeah, I've seen a few senior days, and especially I've seen this before too with the senior who's struggling, who kind of breaks out of it on that day. It was big. And again, it's like, I watch it and it's like I don't understand why it's gotten to the point it got to with him. Again, no one's asking him to be Shaquille O'Neal in there. It's just, you know, attack with some energy and, you know, play like he did not just last year, but for the first dozen games of this year. That's exactly what they need. So that was really good to see for the Vols. It's also interesting with him. He had the – well, he was crying. He was very emotional. And he had the – I thought he was going to kiss midcourt.
Yeah.
Which we've seen – I know, you know, like, for example, Michigan State players do that. But he sort of did the, like, two-hand, you know, like, a little – which is probably, like, especially this year, probably a good call, you know?
Probably
like,
so.
Yeah. Just but
it's kind of a questionable move in any time.
It is. It really is.
To get the floor.
Yeah. Like the move is to get real close but not actually put your lips on the floor.
Right.
But, especially this year. But it's interesting, too, because he's talking after the game, and he actually said, you know, I don't know if I could – like go through this again, talking about next year. Earlier this week, he was really like talking about next year as a real possibility. And then it sounded less likely yesterday, but I don't know. That's something to watch too. 6-year senior John Fulkerson, real possibility. And like Jimmy Dykes made the point on the broadcast, like if you're John Fulkerson and you've kind of had this up and down year and next year, you know that Kennedy Chandler's coming in, you know, to get you the ball and a real, you know, killer point guard, you know, maybe that entices you to come back. It'd be good for the Vols if he did. No one should be confused by that. But they're going to need more than him, too, moving forward here. Like Pons is subbed out late in that game, offense for defense. They're taking him out, and not just like free throw stuff or whatever, like they're taking him out for offensive possessions and putting him in for defense. That shouldn't happen. But he's just out there floating around shooting threes. You know,
Use your size, man.
Yeah, you got like – he's incredible to watch on defense, the way he protects the rim. Go attack the rim on offense. You know, but that's – so they need him going. I agree with Josh Ward, Josiah James. By the way, there's another name thing here with Josiah James. So everybody over there calls him Josiah Jordan James.
Yeah.
I asked him. I asked his mom. I asked his dad. Okay, last year. Do you guys prefer Josiah Jordan James or just Josiah James? I said, yeah, just Josiah James. I'm the only person who calls him that. No one will listen. No one will listen. Like, we don't need to add two syllables.
You think
another
he was
name.
Just being nice to you?
No.
So that you could call him whatever
Look,
you want.
His mom, who is awesome, who was an official, by the way, college basketball official. No, she was adamant, like, oh, yeah, just Josiah. The Jordan, he was named after Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, part of his, you know, that was part of his name, but. Anyway, everybody calls him Josiah Jordan James. It's Josiah James. He's a good player. He's an all-around. He's not like a great shooter, but when he attacks and he looks for a shot a little bit, I think he's the best, you know, perimeter defender. Obviously Pons is the star of the defense, but James is right after him. And man, if he gives you a little bit of offense, especially going to the rim, like he tried to dunk one yesterday, got fouled. That's what you need. That's big. Because the freshmen, you know, are still going to be up and down. Like Springer yesterday, early, looked bad. He was struggling and just taking bad shots. And then, of course, he got going with some plays that only he can make. And, you know, the recipe, the ingredients are there. You know, can they sustain it game after game after game? I think that's a real valid question, and I'm not sure they can.
Well, and there are still moments where – they just look elite athletically. Like the sequence yesterday that got all sorts of play and has been on SportsCenter of Pons blocking the shot and then the transition to Keon Johnson on the other side and the dunk. I mean, that's an NBA-looking play right there. I mean, it was incredible to watch those two go to work like that. You need to see more of that from Pons, especially on the other end of the floor. Like, we know what he can do defensively. I mean, you're talking about one of the elite guys in the country defensively. There's got to be more there offensively. Like, you can't tell me that you can be that gifted and that athletic defensively and not use that to your advantage more often than he has on offense.
Yeah, and some of it is, you know, handling the ball. I mean, he's not great handling the ball, but there's still, I think, more to be done driving it. You know, you don't have to cross people over three times. Just go, you know, go do something other than settling for the right now. Teams are letting them just stand in the corner.
And why wouldn't you? Yeah.
Right. I mean, they'll take him hitting the occasional three because it's just it doesn't benefit Tennessee enough if that's all he's going to do.
When we come back, we'll discuss another Tennessee team here locally that had a heartbreaker over the weekend when it comes to the world of college basketball, and that is Belmont. Do they still have a case to be in the NCAA tournament? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. How'd you like to watch the Preds game in style? Make sure you're tuning in later on in the show as we reveal a keyword for you to text into the game text line at 615-737-1025 for your chance to win the T-Mobile Hockey Homegate. It's your chance to watch a weekend Preds game with a Dos Equis prize pack, which includes a case of beer, dessert from Nothing But Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food provided by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. You must be 21 or older to enter, and we'll have that opportunity coming up for you a little bit later here in the show. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, and Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to get to Belmont here in just a second. But Joe, real quickly, as we look at the SEC tournament, and again, we'll have coverage all week long here about the SEC tournament here in Nashville. Who do you think has the most to prove in this tournament? Obviously, we've talked a lot about Tennessee. Alabama has been solid all season long. Arkansas really started to come on as of late. And, you know, Kentucky as well. They're going to need to win the tournament at this point. Who do you think has the most to prove in the SEC this week?
Well, that's an interesting way to put it. I mean, like you said, Kentucky. I mean, every year the SEC tournament, we automatically, the first thing you think of is Kentucky, the flagship program, and you think of BBN flooding the streets in Nashville. I'm interested to see how that looks, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, with limited participation. I know a lot of people from Kentucky. I remember talking to some of them last year, actually, on one of the weirdest nights I've ever had in life, actually, the night that they announced that, you know, basically sports were about to the Rudy Gobert night,
yeah,
at Bridgestone Arena. And, you know, they have, like, there's all these bus packages where it's like tickets, hotel included. You come, you go to all the games. BBN always fills that place. So are they, like, what's that? Like, are they coming no matter what still, even to try to get the limited tickets? Or are they, because their team's so bad, their team's 9-15, is this the year they take off? I don't know. But Kentucky's got to win the tournament to get in. You know, the NCAA tournament, we've talked all year about this college basketball season, all these, you know, quote-unquote blue bloods who may not get in. I think Duke has to win its tournament. Kentucky has to win its tournament. Looks like North Carolina, Kansas, Michigan State are in. Kansas hasn't been a real issue all year.
Yeah.
But Kentucky and Duke pretty much have to win their tournament. So the most to prove, I think Alabama has a lot to prove because Alabama, one thing, is playing for a one seed. I don't know if they can get there, you know, because Illinois really strengthened itself by beating Michigan last week.
Obliterating Michigan. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, Michigan could be vulnerable. Michigan loses to them and Michigan State yesterday. And if they lose early in the Big Ten tournament, maybe Alabama could sneak up and get a one. Arkansas is the team like doesn't get talked about enough. They're really good. And Tennessee beat that team, of course, the one time they played. But, you know, who's playing for a bid now? You know, basically Kermit. I mean, I think that's the big bubble team that could maybe get in by playing well and not have to win the tournament. And Kermit, you know, Kermit Davis and Ole Miss beat Vanderbilt the other day. I mean, it's crazy to think about this sport. You got no Pippen a week ago, and Vanderbilt scores 75 and beats Ole Miss. And Saturday they score 46 with him and lose to Ole Miss. But that's probably the bubble team. I don't know that there's anybody else who can really play their way into the tournament without winning it. Tennessee is an interesting spot, too, though, if you look at the stakes. Like, right now, they're kind of projected, like, you know, Joe Lunardi, I think, has them as a six. Is that right? I want to make sure I'm right with that. Yeah. If I'm Tennessee, I mean, again, you don't think this way. You would try to win the tournament. But, like, if you win the tournament and you move up to, like, a five or a four, and you're thinking about longevity in the NCAA tournament, that means you're playing a one in the Sweet 16. If you're a six, you can get all the way to the Elite Eight without having to see a Gonzaga, a Baylor, you know, an Illinois. Illinois is really good. So, I mean, you know, from a fan perspective, that's something to watch. I think the six looks real good right now. If they win, if they do some stuff in this tournament, they're probably going to be more in the 4-5 range, which isn't necessarily strong. But you know what?
So are you advocating for Tennessee to win one game and then pull the plug?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the thing, and who knows? You know, these seed lines, even at the end when the committee goes through them, they can move a team up or down to make the bracket fit. So, you know, like you can't count on that stuff anyway. I mean, if they're worried about a one, then that means they got to the Sweet 16 anyway, and then at that point you've done well, and hey, let's see what you've got, whether you play in the first game or the second game of a weekend. But Tennessee has a lot to prove too. I mean, Tennessee was the clear favorite of this league, and obviously it's been disappointing for a lot of this season, and I don't think too many people are picking Tennessee, and I get it, but you know, they lost to Alabama the one time they played them. I'm sure they'd love to get a shot at them in the semifinals on Saturday, which they would have to just win one game Friday to get done.
Yeah, and I think if you're Tennessee, you're hopeful that John Fulkerson, the version we saw yesterday, shows back up, because I agree with the clip we played earlier with Rick Barnes. If that can happen, I think that does a lot to transform what the outlook for this Tennessee team can be. So we'll continue to talk about that as the week comes along here in Nashville. Joe, another team we've spent a lot of time talking about here in Nashville has been Belmont, with the season that they've had with Casey Alexander and company. They fall in pretty heartbreaking fashion in the OVC title game on Saturday night, 86-71 loss to Morehead State, in a game where Morehead State, I mean, they were hitting almost everything out there. Belmont did not play great in that game, but it's almost one of those games, and I think Casey Alexander said this after the game, like, you just kind of throw your hands up and say, you know, what do you do about that? An impressive performance by Morehead State, a heartbreaking loss for Belmont in the OVC title game, and now, I mean, it looks very unlikely that they're going to get an NCAA tournament bid at this point, even though, I mean, there have been fans and followers of the Belmont program who think they deserve a shot even still. I mean, Gentry Estes of the Tennessean has come out with a piece this morning, and the title of it says Belmont deserves a shot at this NCAA tournament no matter what the metrics say. So, I mean, the conversation, I guess, is not over, but I think it's pretty unlikely they're going to find their way in the tournament after that loss.
Yeah, I don't disagree with Gentry that it's a crazy year. And, you know, his question to Casey the other night was, you know, does scheduling intent matter at all? Does that get talked about? And it's a good question, because, again, they had – I mean, USC is a really good team. They were going there. Western Kentucky is a really good team. They had a tournament in Orlando. They were going to play Michigan State in the first game. Gonzaga's in that tournament, St. Louis, Boise State. I mean, all these – whatever combination you looked at with that tournament, they would have had schedule strength bumps, and they would have a chance to win multiple games. So they scheduled themselves – to be in position to get an at-large bid, just as Belmont did for the first time in program history, deservingly so, 2 years ago. If they're using the metrics, which by all accounts they are, they've talked about them being a little bit less important, but if there's any weight given to them, Belmont doesn't have the numbers.
Right.
And it's just the reality of it. It's not, you know, it's not anyone's fault. It's the reality of this year. And so it's tough. I think they should be discussed in the room. I know our friend Emily Proud, proud Belmont alum, has mentioned that the head of selection committee, I think I got to remember if I have this right. She was tweeting about this, like his daughter married a Belmont golfer. Is that right? I think so. And a grandkid's on the way who's going to be a Bruin. So maybe.
Little influence from the top, baby.
You know, that'll make a difference. But it's tough because – it is just like they lost two games without Nick Mazinski.
Yeah.
You know? And you have to take that into account. That's where the discussion should be, too. They lost two games without Nick Mazinski. And so they would have been, what, 26-1? You know, coming into this thing. And, you know, the problem is you have him back. He wasn't full strength, but you have him back. And you got beat soundly by Morehead State. They were just incredible. Broom from Morehead State. Tell me he's not going to be in the NBA. Freshman, I believe. He was incredible. But they hit so many contested threes, and Belmont didn't have its best shooting night. Like Casey Alexander said at the game, he's like, I'll probably go through the film and see some mistakes, but this wasn't like some, like, you know, come out and, oh, we really just botched it in this pressure moment. Like, the other team just came out immediately, and they were just on fire, shooting 54% in that game, huge shot after huge shot. It's tough because Belmont has a couple guys, Mazinski and Grayson Murphy. Those guys are four-bid players. They earned a bid last year. They didn't get to play in the tournament, and that team could have been really dangerous with Tyler Scanlon at the four.
Yep.
And now this happened, so they're going to have to wait until their senior year to get another shot at it. Belmont next year, to me, is a preseason top 25 team. They probably won't be one, but that's how good they're going to be. If everybody comes back, like, as of now, they are.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you know, it's just one of those things. Like, I flipped the game on Saturday night, and it seemed like every shot that Morehead State threw up was just finding a way to go in. And it wasn't like it was bad defense. Like, they had, you know, a couple looks that they got in transition where Belmont's, you know, chasing, and especially when it got, you know, out of control late, where you're trying to force things offensively and you just get caught the other way. Like, that happened as the game went on. But even when it was still, I mean, you still had some time left to work with if you were Belmont. I mean, some of the shots and just dagger shots that Morehead State hit, there's not much you can do about that. Like, the defense was good and they were just hitting shots.
Yeah, so look, they're not going to get in the NCAA tournament, 26-4 with their numbers. They better be in the NIT. I mean,
yes.
Because now in normal years, and I love the rule that the NIT has now that if you win your league in the regular season, you're auto in. It's not the case this year. I mean, it would be absolutely ridiculous. And this is with the NIT, sometimes you worry about, you know, well, this Power 5 ninth place team here, get a few more eyeballs than a Belmont. It would be absolutely criminal for Belmont not to be in the NIT. So that better happen. And if so, they'll play. And I tell you what, they might play for a while in it.
Coming up next, we'll switch gears and dive into the Tennessee Titans with a free agency coming right around the corner. Also introduce our poll question of the day at 1025 The Game on Twitter. That's coming up next. But first, I got to tell you about my friends at FanDuel. And I know some of you have probably never bet on golf before, and that's why I want to tell you about the under par bonus on FanDuel Sportsbook. FanDuel is hooking you up all weekend long during the Players Championship, and best of all, new and existing users can cash in whether your golfer wins or loses. So here's how it works. You get up to $5 in site credit for each stroke your golfer finishes the tournament under par. So you can spin the under par wheel to determine your bonus. All you got to do is bet $50 or more on the outright winner. Just be sure to get your bet in before the Players Championship tees off on Thursday to be eligible. Maybe you like Rory McIlroy. Maybe you like Dustin Johnson in this tournament. That's the way you might be able to go on the FanDuel Sportsbook. And FanDuel Sportsbook is the official betting operator of the PGA Tour. So that means there are even more ways for you to win all tournament long. Just do me one favor. When you sign up, do so with promo code ROB so they know that I sent you. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code ROB. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. A max bonus of $50. Terms apply. For problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789. 102.5 The Game is kicking off every weekend with free beer.
Free beer!
And who doesn't love free beer? Ryan Porras certainly loves free beer, and you can love it as well. Make sure you're tuning in all day on Friday for your chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House located at Opera Mills Mall. Ryan Porras has been money with his trivia questions as of late. Money.
Very good. And polls have been pretty good, too.
Yeah. Polls have been pretty good. We got another good poll question today.
Thank you, Joe.
Absolutely.
That's a rare compliment on the poll question.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, I was critical a few weeks ago. You know,
that's really stuck with him.
This.
Really stuck with him.
But, and here's another compliment. I hope everybody on Twitter saw that picture of Porath and Eric Church.
Oh, the Eric Church photo? Yeah. Yes.
As their hands met.
I told you, it's wonderful. It's the greatest photo I've ever taken. I tweeted it out at RStanleyNHL on Friday. The photo of Ryan Porath and Eric Church meeting together as one at a concert. I believe from 2017 was when that concert took
place. That was like 2 days before the Preds played in the Stanley Cup Final.
Yes.
It was a great picture. And look, given the setting, I mean, I can't nitpick. But if you could have gone a little bit left, I would have liked to. I mean, I can imagine.
We were kind of in a mosh pit, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I mean, I get it. I'm just saying, like, I can imagine the expression on Porth's face of wonder and joy.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, if you were a little bit left, look, it would have got, you know.
I can see the expression on Porth's face just by staring at the back of his head. I know what the expression was.
It's a long hair back then, too.
Huh? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I could have used a haircut before that photo.
That was beautiful, though.
It's okay, we got to get that thing blown up, and maybe, you know. Maybe one day Eric Church signs that thing for you.
That is my new life goal, to make that happen.
That's it.
We make that a poster. We set up outside his house. We know we can find him. We know where he lives.
Yeah,
I got a buddy who knows exactly where he lives. We set up. I think it could be a great show.
See if we can make that happen, Porth.
We'd be like, who was it who was on Brett Favre's front lawn every day? Trying to figure out whether he was coming back.
Oh, there's no telling.
Some Packers fan or something?
No, like what, 10 years ago when ESPN was out there or NFL Network? They were set up on Brett Favre's front lawn in Mississippi trying to figure out whether or not he was coming back.
In Kill, Mississippi?
Yeah.
That's where he's from. I didn't remember that. Interesting. Well, that's a media stakeout. This is more like friends.
But maybe
friends,
yeah. Maybe y'all do the show there every single morning before, you know, until he comes out and
that
signs
handshake
that photo.
Was not a normal handshake. That was a, hey buddy, this could be special.
He
yeah.
knew.
Type of handshake.
He knew.
Yeah. Right. Like, I'm sure he's slapped hands with a lot of fans, but that was like,
there was a connection.
This is my guy.
Yeah.
Boom. Yeah. Thunder buddies.
Thunder buddies. Exactly. It's exactly what it was. Ryan Porth and Eric Church. Thunder buddies here on the program. Well, speaking of Porth, his poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter is this. Titans fans, what would be your approach with pending free agent tight end Jonnu Smith? And the options are this. Transition tag, franchise tag, a multi-year deal, or you let Jonnu Smith walk. So far, 125 votes are in. 34% say multi-year deal for Jonnu Smith. 29% say franchise tag. 19% say transition tag. And 18% so you let Jonnu Smith walk. Now, remember, the deadline for the franchise tag is tomorrow at 3 o'clock Central Time. So if that's the route the Titans are going to go, they don't have much longer to make that decision. Joe, what do you think of the options for the Titans and the results of the poll question thus far?
Yeah, I don't understand the 18% who just want him to walk. I think you're maybe underestimating how good he is and also what the hole would be for this team. I mean,
well, I think it may not be they want to let him walk, but just with the financial situation, maybe you feel like that's the best option.
Don't make excuses for him.
I'm just throwing it out.
They have no excuse for that take.
I'm just throwing it out.
No, look,
there.
I understand. There's a lot of tough choices to make. I mean, to me, you have to do everything you can to keep Jonnu Smith on this football team. Like, Anthony Firkser is also, I think, important to sign. But Anthony Firkser is not... He's not the guy who's you're going to build around in this offense. You know, in this offense, you need a guy who has, frankly, just the size and physicality of Jonnu Smith to go with the talent he has downfield. You have to have both elements. He brings both elements. Anthony Firkser doesn't bring both elements. Anthony Firkser is a real nice player, and I think important. But you're not just saying, buy Jonnu, we got Firkser. It's not reality. So if he leaves, then you also have Michael Pruitt as a free agent. I think Jeff Swaim, they're all free agents. You have to figure that out, but I think then you have to really go out and invest somewhere. Draft pick, Kyle Rudolph, you know, I don't know. You're going to have to – it's not like you can just part with that, save the money, and be okay. And I just think – beyond that, I just think he's special talent. I really do, and I think we would have seen that a lot more last year – if not for the injuries up front.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be interesting to see if he makes it to free agency, what his market value is. Because as free agency draws closer, remember, we're about a week away from free agency beginning in the NFL. His name is starting to be brought up more and more. I know Matt Bowen from ESPN kind of went through like a film study the other day and had maybe the Bills as a target destination for Jonnu Smith just based on their need at tight end and what he could bring to that offense. So, look, to your point, you've talked about this. Like, you look at the numbers, and they're not going to blow you away with Jonnu Smith in terms of what the dollar amount could look like based on the production that he's had. I think if you watch him play and you watch the situation that he was put into last year with the Titans offense, you recognize that that guy has a lot of ability and that he could, if everything works out well for your offense and people stay healthy, I mean, he could have a monster season at the tight end position. So I'm interested to see what his number could look like if it gets to that point. Now, a lot of Titans fans have thrown out the idea of placing the transition tag on Jonnu Smith. What do you think of that? Do you think that's something the Titans are actively considering with Jonnu Smith? And if you had to answer right now, would that be the way you'd go if you were John Robinson and the Titans?
Yeah, I'd go that way. And the idea being that obviously you're saving money there. You're saving about $1.5 million if it works out and you retain him. You're also risking, of course, other teams can still give offers. You don't lock him up. But I think in this year, I think that's a worthwhile gamble that, teams just aren't going to be doing nearly as much as they would have and aren't going to be spending as much as they would have. So I think if you do that, you still have the ability to match if he gets an offer, and you still can obviously, just like with Derrick Henry last year, any sort of tag, you can work on a long-term deal. So to me, I feel like one of those two tags tomorrow, and I mean, I've changed on this a lot. I think we first started talking about tags, like, we didn't tag anybody on this team. And because, again, like you're talking about locked in money in a tight year, but I mean, he's worth it. There's no one else who would even be a candidate, and I feel like the transition tag is a gamble that could pay off this year.
Ryan Porth, as a noted Titans fan, as you look at Jonnu Smith and the options that the Titans now have in front of them facing him and his future, if you're John Robinson and the Titans, how do you handle Jonnu Smith moving forward here, either in the next couple of days or certainly next week as free agency begins?
I would place the transition tag on him and either let it ride for 1 year, and I think Jonnu Smith would want to let it ride for 1 year and see if he has a bigger year statistically and goes into a more ideal NFL offseason and goes into free agency. So you would still get kind of that contract year boost out of your top tight end. But the last thing I'm doing on that list is just letting him walk. That is the absolute last thing I'm doing, because there's already going to be a huge change in the receiver room. I don't want there to be a huge change in the tight end room as well. And then you have a lot of questions about the passing game going into 2021.
Yeah, I mean that position has been been very important, obviously, for the Titans for a long time, going back to Delanie Walker passing it off to Jonnu Smith. There's no one who's able to step in and be that kind of all around tight end if you lose him. And no guarantee that whoever you might draft in the third round is gonna be able to come in and be ready. Jonnu Smith wasn't ready as a third round pick early in his career. Took him some time. And eventually you're like, oh, wow, this guy has got a lot of ability. And now that he's starting to realize that, not starting to, now that he has realized that, I think he's a really important guy to have in the future.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We've got a texter that says, watch Jonnu go to Indy. Wentz loves utilizing athletic tight ends, and they've got plenty of cap space to sign him. So I guess that would be the doomsday scenario for the Titans, is you're not able to get a deal with him. Don't go a tag route with him either. And Jonnu Smith ends up in Indianapolis with Carson Wentz.
And, of course, if you did like the transition tag, Indy could just give him a massive offer anyway. And either way, either they get him or they, hurt you because you have to spend a lot to keep him. So Indy with that cap space, that's a real potential thorn in the side.
It is a potential thorn in the side of the Titans for sure. And when we come back, we'll continue the free agent discussion around the Tennessee Titans. Which free agents can they least afford to lose coming up later this month? And what should the approach in free agency be for John Robinson and the Titans? We'll discuss that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. When the Preds have a weekday game this season, it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. If you guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game that night, you will win a prize pack. The next chance to participate is tomorrow morning at 8:45 as the Predators take on the Carolina Hurricanes tomorrow on the road. So we'll have that opportunity coming up for you tomorrow.
Are you going to get one right?
Probably not. The odds are not in my favor, my friend.
What's the score now? 5-4-2-0?
Yeah, listeners at 5. You're at 4.
No, I'm still at 1.
Ryan Porth is still at 1.
My called shot was the Victor Arvidsson goal.
Let's not give him too much credit
click.
Here. And sorry. Robbie's still yet to be on the board.
5-4-1-0.
Yeah.
It's March.
I think I'm just going to pick Ellie Tolvanen in every game.
Even if the listener picks him?
Yeah, I no longer care about that. It's time to get on the board.
Yeah, that's probably a good one. I mean, Tolvanen or Forsberg.
Yeah, so.
It should be one of those two every time.
I'm just giving you
But then whatever one you pick, it'll be the other one that scores that game. Then,
probably
then
so.
You'll flip it, and they'll flip-flop
on I mean, statistically, that's likely at this point. So we'll see if I can do that tomorrow. Finally get on the board halfway through the season. See if that works out for me.
It'll happen.
Joe, talking now about the Tennessee Titans, and as always, we'll take your texts all show long on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. NFL free agency unofficially beginning next week, next Wednesday officially beginning as the new league year comes into play. As you look at the Titans and the free agents that they have, we've talked a lot about Jonnu Smith and Corey Davis and Jayon Brown. Which one do you think they can afford to lose the least as they move into the next part of this offseason here? We talked a lot about it. Obviously, defensively, that's the main concern with this team. But two pretty good players in Jonnu Smith and Corey Davis as well. We've kind of gone back and forth on this in terms of how the priorities have changed and have shifted around as both the season went on and now as the offseason has gone on as well. Which free agent do you think the Titans can least afford to lose?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've changed my answer a few times here, but I think I'm giving the slight edge to Jonnu Smith because he's an important part of the run game, you know? The run game is an important part of this team.
So is Corey Davis in that blocking down.
Yeah, you know, he is, and that's no joke.
Am I going to be the guy now that's defending Corey Davis in his blocking?
No, I've been a consistent believer in Corey Davis as a blocker. And it is, and that is important. But you know, at the point of attack, Jonnu Smith just he's involved in every aspect of the offense. You know, and again, it's not like there's a great replacement for Corey Davis either. But I feel like, given the overall impact on this offense, I think Jonnu Smith is a little bit more of a loss. I think you can. I think you have a better chance of finding, you know, not just one guy, but a couple guys, draft free agency, to replace Corey Davis than you do having a chance to find someone to just come in and be Jonnu Smith. Plenty of tight ends out there, but you know, he is not just your average tight end. And it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, depending on what happens. Obviously, the Titans could just franchise tag him and end it. But if there is any sort of pursuit of Jonnu Smith, what other teams think of him? Anybody doing their homework knows how good he is.
Well, I would probably answer Corey Davis as the free agent that I think they can least afford to lose. But is it crazy that you and I keep having this conversation, and I don't know that Jayon Brown has been at the top of either one of our lists at all? And you look at that side of the ball, obviously, that's where most of the issues are with this Titans team right now. Are we nuts for not having Jayon Brown at the top of the list? Because I know a lot of Titans fans do. They would say Jayon Brown is the guy you can't afford to lose. You can't afford to get even weaker from a personnel perspective on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I get it, and maybe. But this is where you have someone on a rookie deal who can come in and you think be pretty good there. And that's different from the other side of the ball. And also, I just feel like it's really important to not let your offense get chipped away. Like, you have to, you know, it's so important to keep what you do really well together. And the defense just didn't do very much well at all last year. And that's not Jayon Brown's fault. He's been one of the best playmakers on that defense last couple of years. He's also a guy who's been hurt a few times. That's something to keep in mind, too. Like, Deion Brown deserves to be in the discussion, and if anybody wants to put him ahead of those guys, I don't think that's crazy. I just can't do it. Because you have David Long, and I just, to me, I just, you want to totally remake that defense, and maybe it could get worse, and that is possible. Maybe not
a whole lot worse.
Yeah, maybe not on third down, but, like, it's possible. I mean, you lose him as a playmaker, you lose a lot. He's the guy with the red dot. You know, he's an important guy. I have to put both of those other guys ahead of him.
Isn't it a green dot?
Oh, did I say red? Yeah, green. Yeah, you know. What is the red dot? The red dot's like, like in a movie with, like, the laser.
Yeah,
like,
you don't want to be with the red dot.
Terminator. Yeah. The red dot. Anyway, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's fine. No, thank you for correcting me.
Boy.
Yeah.
You got to keep that red dot off of you there.
Yeah, that means you're dead.
So, obviously, number one, I'm just excited that free agency is almost here because we're getting to the point where you need to start to have some movement on some of this stuff, and I know Titans fans are looking forward to it as well. Not only with, making decisions of guys that are here and what their future could look like Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith and Jayon Brown, but also just free agency as a whole. I am very fascinated to see how the Titans are going to approach this and how much money and resources and shifting around they do in free agency this year. And you come out with a piece minutes ago on theathletic.com kind of highlighting the Titans and free agency and what the approach should be. Everybody, we've talked so much about the pass rush, and obviously that's going to be crucial for the Titans this offseason, but it needs to be more than that, in your opinion. How do you think the Titans should handle free agency as it's a week away now in the NFL offseason?
Yeah, so, yeah, trying to break down, like, what are the positions they should be looking for people. Now, again, some of that has to do with who they lose or don't lose. But the obvious thing everybody talks about is pass rush, of course. But beyond that, well, let me ask you. Let's take out D-line and outside linebacker because I think that's obvious. What would be, if you had three more positions that you would say they should be looking for people, what would those positions be?
I would say wide receiver for sure. I think depending on what happens with Jonnu Smith, I'd say tight end. But let's just say for the sake of this discussion that he's back, either on a deal or they transition tag him. I think you're probably in good shape there. I would expect Ferster to be back at this point. I mean, wide receiver, I think definitely on the list, even if Corey Davis is back. Like, that's the position to me that you've got to look at. And then, like, I don't know how, and I understand it's not going to get as much attention as the pass rush is going to get, but I don't know how, if you're John Robinson right now, you couldn't look at this team and be pretty concerned about inside linebacker. Like, that's got to be a part of your defense where Rashawn Evans, this is a huge year for him, probably going to lose Jayon Brown. Like, to me, if there's an opportunity, maybe with a veteran guy, to see if you can, I don't know if upgrade there is the right word, but build more depth there, that's got to be something I think you consider if you're John Robinson.
Yeah, no, I agree. You got Will Compton, who came back in last year, and, you know, I thought he did some good things. Nick DeZubner, who's, and Darren Bates are both special teams guys. So what's the evaluation of them as special teams players? If it's really high, then that's, you know, worth trying to keep them. By the way, all these guys are unrestricted free agents. Compton, Zubner, Bates, yep. And obviously we know Jayon Brown. Only Rashawn Evans is locked up. But maybe you can upgrade the depth in terms of, you know, defensively, you know, as part of the defense. Maybe you can upgrade that. I think that's definitely – it's kind of like with Corey Davis. If you lose Corey Davis, can you sign like a Marvin Jones for a few million cheaper? If you lose Jayon Brown, who's out there that you could – grab? And again, just at every position, there are going to be bargains to be had. This week, I think we're going to see a whole bunch of players let loose of their contracts by NFL teams.
I'm interested to see if Kenny Vaccaro is one of those guys this week. I mean, we've talked about maybe him being the next one now that you've moved on from Adam Humphries.
Called shot, Ryan Porth.
Yeah, that is a called shot for Ryan Porth. I wonder if that happens this week, if Kenny Vaccaro this time next week is no longer a member of the Tennessee Titans. I think it's pretty likely.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's, I mean, he's been terrific, but I think so too, and I think he won't be the only one. The other names are harder to
discern.
But there may be a Titans cornerback out there for someone else to sign. And again, you think of it that way, and we've done these things at The Athletic too. Like everybody who covers NFL teams go through your list of possible cap casualties. There are a ton of names of good players who might be out on the street that you can sign at bargain rates.
When we come back, we'll be joined by our good friend Corey Curtis from News 2. We'll get into the Titans discussion with him and look ahead to where the Titans could go in free agency, maybe with the franchise or transition tag as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.